Sacred, secular, spiritual, material, discipline, freedom. It's so easy to construe these words as opposed to one another, to relate to them dualistically. But in this wonderfully perceptive poem, Leaving Mount Baldy, Leonard Cohen blows open that dualistic approach and reveals in the process the paradox at the heart of true religion, the one the Buddha expresses by saying, "My practice is no practice." And Jesus, through his teaching that the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. Well, the poem's title refers to the moment in 1999 when Leonard Cohen, Canadian poet and singer-songwriter, left the Zen monastery on Mount Baldy, just out of Los Angeles, where he'd spent several years living as a monk. "I come down from the mountain," he writes. And as commentator Roger Houston remarks, while this is a literal statement, it is also a metaphor, something of a self-parody even. Cohen is coming down from his high notions of what spirituality means, coming back to join ordinary life and people on earth. He's given the monastic vocation, serious spiritual life, a good shot. "There have been many years of study and rigorous practice," he says. But now he's leaving that life behind. He's taking off his monastic identity as he leaves his robes hanging on a peg in the cabin where "I had sat so long and slept so little, putting in long hours of solitary prayer. It's time to rejoin the masses, the stream of cars heading into the city. I finally understood," he says, "that I had no gift for spiritual matters." Except, of course, that this is itself a profound spiritual insight. The way Cohen capitalizes spiritual matters suggests irony, suggests he's awake to what the Trappist monk Thomas Merton also recognized as the perennial temptation of the professionally religious. That is, the temptation to think oneself spiritually special, to believe that because you're a monk, a priest, a born-again Christian, or a serious practitioner, that you're somehow on a higher plane than everyone else. In his journal, Merton wrote of the day he too rejoined the human race, though in his case it didn't involve literally leaving his monastery. Rather, it occurred when he suddenly realised, in the middle of a busy shopping district, that he was no different from the people around him, no better or holier, no more beloved of God. This realisation, Merton said, was like waking from a dream of separateness, of spurious self-isolation in a special world, the world of renunciation and supposed holiness. And he marvelled at himself to think that for 16 or 17 years I have been taking seriously this pure illusion that being a monk makes me special. This illusion that is implicit in so much, he says, of our monastic thinking. Well, at least it took Cohen only 5 years to work it out. And as he leaves his robes behind and enters the stream of cars heading for LA, he hears a heart, his heart perhaps, cry out, "Thank you, beloved." The traffic is the perfect metaphor for everyday life's humbling ordinariness. Yet entering or re-entering that ordinariness produces or provokes in Cohen the most profound gratitude and relief. It was the same for Merton. To understand, finally to accept that one has no gift for spiritual matters is, in Merton's word, to regain the immense joy of being a man. To experience it as a glorious destiny to be a member of the human race and nothing more. You might remember from that bit in his journal where he says that his relief could have been expressed in the words, thank God, I am a man, no more than any other men. But what does this mean? Does it mean there's no point in dedicated spiritual practice? That it doesn't matter whether we pray or not, are disciplined or not? That there's no such thing as the spiritual life? Well, yes and no. Both Cohen and Merton had dedicated years to ascetical discipline that helped liberate them from habitual ways of being, that awakened their fuller self-awareness and openness to reality. The whole point of spiritual practice, meditation, fasting, retreat, pilgrimage, is to do with enabling such liberation and awareness. It's the work necessary to clarify vision, purify and simplify the heart, and make us receptive to grace. But the whole point of this work is the transformation of ordinary life, the fuller realization of our humanity, and the deepening of our capacity to love. The Zen parable speaks of the practitioner before enlightenment chopping wood and carrying water, and after enlightenment chopping wood and carrying water. Life goes on, but we see it afresh. We're in it differently, and we enable different possibilities for others. Spiritual practice, though, is corrupted when it becomes an end in itself, when our discipline and rigour are the means by which we assure ourselves and others of our righteousness, our holier-than-thou-ness. And Cohen picks up just this kind of corruption in his fellow practitioners who feel so threatened when he heads off down the road. They begin to ask him angry questions about, capital U, capital R, ultimate reality, and don't like to see him smoking again. But their anger and judgmentalism are the very signs that they're not quite as enlightened as they might like to think. It's the same with the Pharisees, who are fixated on adherence to the rule of Sabbath without understanding what the rule is in service of. Which is why Jesus insists the Sabbath was made for humankind and not humankind for the Sabbath. But this brings us, I think, to a difficult question. I've been saying that discipline in the spiritual life is necessary, yet penultimate. Just as the musician practices scales over and over, not so that they become great at scales, but in order to liberate their art, so the lover of God practices self-control, a disciplined rhythm of prayer, in order to learn simply to be with God, to be available to be drawn deeper and deeper into relationship. Sometimes we can keep on with the scales and never move to the concerto. We can keep on with the restraint, the work of prayer and renunciation, when really the time has come to lighten up, to let be, to trust our deeper desires, to come down from the mountain. But sometimes it's the other way around. We can think we're playing the concerto when really we need to go back to the scales. We can let go discipline prematurely before our deeper transformation is wrought. In the name of freedom, we can become self-indulgent, self-willed, still enslaved without realizing it to the egoic self, and not very good at the concerto. Well, how do we know which is which? I don't think it's always easy to discern. But here's one thought. John Mayne taught that when you meditate, it's important to say the mantra throughout the whole time of meditation. At some point, he said, the mantra will cease. It will have brought you into silence. But the practitioner does not choose to stop saying it. Your responsibility is simply to stay with it until you can say it no longer. The discipline is transcended, in other words, when it transcends itself. Well, John Mayne's is not the only method of meditation, but I think there's something in this teaching which has broader application. It's the insight that the transcending of spiritual discipline is itself a fruit of the discipline and occurs as gift. How did Cohen know it was time for him to leave the monastery? He doesn't tell us in the poem, but it's telling that he leaves the monastery by joining the Santa Monica Freeway. The whole point of monastic life is freedom, freedom from duality. And when he has authentically attained, or at least significantly on the way to that freedom, then Cohen is, as it were, free to go. The practice has transcended itself. It's the same, it seems, for Jesus. He is so intimately connected with the Father that in him the religious rules are all transcended and fulfilled, which is why he can say that the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. And how amazing to trust that in him we too are being drawn by our practice beyond practice, and beyond religion, into experiencing the whole of life as prayer.